You know the vibes. Welcome to a very special episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24. As always, it's myself, Mo Mootsy, but alongside me today is the one and only Mr. Scott Perry, GM extraordinaire. Some of the teams you're watching right now in the NBA getting to the playoffs, you may or may not have put those together. But here he is on the show with us. BJ's away in Chicago, so me and Scott are rocking out today. Mr. Perry, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Mo. It seems like you can't get away from guys from Detroit.
Bro? It's,
you know, exactly.
Let me tell you one thing.
On the show, right?
Let me tell you one thing. BJ said to me, when I first met BJ years and years ago now, he said to me, Mo, I'm going to turn you into a Detroit fan. I said, BJ, that's never happened in a million years. And every person he introduces me to is from Detroit. So
Detroit,
shout out to the people from Detroit. I'm going to say, what up, though? We here. Okay. The regular season has finally concluded. Scott, how are you feeling? 82 games for each team. For me, it's gone by in a flash. How are you feeling about that regular season?
It really has gone by in a flash. This is my first year on the other side in the last 23 years. But been a great year for me just to really get a chance to watch all of the teams from afar, you know, not necessarily have a vested interest in any one of them. And learned a lot about a lot of different teams this year. I think it was great for the NBA, in all honesty, that so many things were coming down to the last week in terms of seeding in the playoffs. You know, obviously finishing today, and I know we're going to talk about a few of them here today.
That's right. You know, your first year in the media, away from the other side of being in the front office, I wish that we had a heart monitor attached to you so we can see the difference in blood pressure when you're not watching the final day of the season, worried about who you're going to match up with in the playoffs, and you're actually just at home enjoying the game.
I can look at my watch and tee right now. I said, my blood pressure is really low right now, Mo.
Well, mine is not.
Okay.
Mine is not, because the Celtics' reward for being the most amazing regular season team we've seen in a long time is more than likely going to be a first-round matchup against either Miami, who are always great in the playoffs, or the Philadelphia 76ers. So we're going to break down the play-in games because they're coming up this week, and then next week we're going to break down the playoff matchups. But before we do that, honorable mentions. I want to give these honorable mentions out right now. So here are the teams that didn't make it that deserve an honorable mention. Okay. The Rockets finished 11th in the Western Conference. Mm-hmm. The Spurs finished 14th in the Western Conference. In fact, the Spurs don't deserve the mention. Wemby deserves the mention. Right. And that's it. The rest of the teams who didn't make it into the play-in or playoffs is not looking good. I mean, I'm looking at some of them. I'm looking at your Pistons. I'm looking at the Wizards. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the Hornets. And I know LaMelo Ball was out with injuries. I'm looking at the Nets. And I just think a lot of these teams, I don't really see the teams above them getting any worse anytime soon. Yep. And I don't see them getting a hell of a lot better. Have you got any teams where they didn't make it to the postseason, but you've seen one or two things that have caught your eye?
No, I think you caught it just right, Mo. Those teams you just mentioned, you know, especially over here in the Eastern Conference, they've got a long way to go. You know, I didn't see anything that made me believe that they were a step away from, you know, jumping into the playoff mix right away. You mentioned Houston, you know, just a few weeks ago, they were a real threat to make it into the play-in tournament. And then just had a bad stretch there.
And their best player has been out injured, though. Alperen Şengün missed the remainder of the season.
Şengün has been out, exactly. But they won, like, 11 or 12 straight
ball. Yep. And I believe if he was healthy, we may have been looking at this, that the Warriors were one of the teams that missed the postseason.
You could absolutely be right with that assessment. And then you mentioned, you know, moving forward, you talk about the San Antonio Spurs. What I'm excited to see is what they do to start putting players and pieces around this young man. Because, look, he was as good, if not better, than advertised.
That's the best rookie I've seen. Court.
Yeah, and you know, the sky is the limit for him. And it's just, it's really going to be interesting to watch that build-out process of that team and just see how quickly they enter into the playoffs and then become one of those fixtures in the playoffs for as long as that guy's playing, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Actually, another team, the Memphis Grizzlies, because they were just marred by injuries and a few issues with Ja Morant this season. And this is what's going to be so interesting next year at the Western Conference. There's going to be 12, maybe 13 teams that all need a piece of that pie. And the Utah Jazz always confuse me because they're always looking really strong up until kind of the All-Star break, and then they just kind of fall off because maybe by design. But without further ado, Scott, let's get into the NBA player matchups. Do you want to start in the East or the West?
Let's start where we're talking about the West. Let's go to the loaded West. Let's tackle that because that's going to be tough. Yeah, let's tackle
because the first matchup in the Western Conference, the number 10 Warriors are going for a short drive up the road to Sacramento. And remember, last season we saw some very heated matchups between these two teams. Draymond Green stomping on Domantas Sabonis' chest. It went all the way down to a game 7, if I'm not mistaken. So first and foremost, who you got?
This is a tough one because I think that Sacramento plays with a lot of confidence when they play the Warriors. I think they believe they can beat this team. But with that being said, and even though they are the home team, I've just got to go with what I've been seeing here over the last week to 2 weeks. And Sacramento, with the exception of today blowing out Portland, they have not played well here down the stretch. And I'm not going to bet against Golden State, the championship pedigree. It's one game to get in. They know they must win this game to continue that core group, you know, moving forward, giving them a chance to get into the playoffs. So I'm going to take the Golden State Warriors, that experience, that championship pedigree, in a one-game setting to go into Sacramento and win that game.
Now, they split the regular season series when you're 2 games apiece. The Warriors won the first 2 matchups. The Kings won the second 2 matchups. But since the All-Star break, the Warriors are 19-10. Meanwhile, the Sacramento Kings, 15-13. And I think the biggest thing in this matchup is Malik Monk's injury. I think that's absolutely devastating for the Sacramento Kings, and he's going to be sorely missed. And the Warriors, you know, if you've been watching them, especially on the road of late, have been finding that groove. And, you know, with, like you say, their championship pedigree, their experience, and not to mention Klay Thompson being a free agent at the end of this season and not knowing the future. We all thought 2022, was it 22 or 21? 22 was their kind of last run at things. But this season might actually be their last run at things because
no question.
You never know. You can never count out the Warriors. Over in the East, the first playing game is going to be the Atlanta Hawks going to the windy city of Chicago, where BJ currently is, to take on the Bulls. Now, that's a bit of a more, it's a bit of a less clear-cut one than the Warriors. I think no one's really expecting the Kings to win. It'll be a big surprise if the Kings win, but this one you could call either way. So who are you rocking with on this?
This one is really tough because you got two teams that have really been up and down all year, a lot more down than up, to be quite frank with you. But I'm going to give the Bulls the slightest edge because they are the home team. They have played in a lot of close games this year and fared pretty well. I watched some of the game against the Knicks today, and I think they had gone to overtime maybe 10 times.
11 times.
Today was 11 times against the Knicks as well. So they were 7-3. Before today's game where they end up losing to the Knicks to be 7-4 in overtime games. They've got a big-time closer in DeMar DeRozan. I like the competitive fire that a guy like Alec Caruso brings, and I think he's going to do a good job defensively on one of the guards from Atlanta. And I'm going to favor the home team there in that game. It's going to be a tight one, but I'm going to give Chicago the slight edge. They've been playing okay here down the stretch.
Yeah, well, in the regular season, they matched up 3 times. The Bulls won 2 of those 3 matchups. And looking at their form coming into the play-in, the Bulls have been 5-5 over their last 10. The Hawks, 3-7. They've lost 6 straight. Mm-hmm. And they got absolutely walloped today by the Indiana Pacers, who once again put up, what did they put up today? 157?
57 points.
And I think they put up 150 every time they play the Hawks.
Yeah, and you don't want to be going into a playoff game, one-and-done game for that matter, and you've just given up 157 points.
In your 6th straight loss.
Yeah, your 6th straight loss. not a good mental space to be in for a team going in for such a big game. I know people gonna say, oh, okay, we're starting fresh again, but no, too recent of a time. And I just don't, and I think too, you know, defensively, the Bulls are a better team defensively than what the Hawks are. And so again, I think that helps give them an additional edge as well.
I got a bit of a hot take. I want to say that if the Hawks, and this isn't throwing shade at Trae Young, this is just one of those things about the team. If the Hawks were still without Trae Young, I would feel more confident about them winning a one-off game against the Bulls than with Trae Young. Do you see where I'm coming from?
I see exactly where you're coming from. Look, taking nothing away from Trae Young, Trae Young is a talented basketball player. And just like with any other player, he has his strengths and his weaknesses. The weaknesses to his game really show up a lot of times in playoff basketball. He lacks size. He's not a good individual defender. So teams will seek him out on that end of the floor. So unless he's just really has it going in a huge way offensively, he can become a liability in a playoff series when people really seek to exploit matchups and exploit his lack of size and his lack of defensive presence. So I understand what you're saying there. Again, it's not a knock on him, as you know, he's an all-star player in this league. But if I were coaching against that team, I definitely would game plan and make him defend every action possible in the game and see how he fares with that. And if he does a terrific job and they beat us, I can live with that. But I'm sure going to be trying to find that out.
To be fair to Trae, there have been numerous times this season, especially late in fourth quarters, where he's come up with steals and he's actually made great defensive plays, which has been a noticeable improvement in his game. Having said that, the Hawks finished the season 10 games below 500. And in the games without Trae Young, they were a 500 team. So, you know, they'd still be in the play-in, but they were a better team without him if you go by the numbers. Right. I think the biggest factor in this game for me is going to be whether DeMar DeRozan brings his daughter to the game or not, because we saw the impact she had in the play-in last year. If you're a new NBA fan, last year in the play-in, every time a player shot a free throw, DeMar's daughter decided to scream at the top of her lungs, putting them off and winning the first game for the Bulls. But, you know, these are two teams in NBA purgatory. They were in the play-in last year. They're in the play-in this year. And if they do win this first game, they don't qualify for the playoffs. They have to go and play the winner of the other play-in game, which as it stands, or as it's confirmed now, the games have just finished, the number 8-seeded Heat versus the number 7-seeded Philadelphia 76ers. Scott, that's a tough one to call, because the Sixers, 8-2 over their last eight, they've won 8 straight games. I think they haven't lost a game since Embiid's return to the lineup. Heat, though, 7-3 in their last 10 games. They looked really good today. It seems like they always peak at the right time. They said all season long, Jimmy Butler in particular says, just wait for the postseason, just wait for the postseason. How are you calling this one? Because the winner of this becomes the 7-seed and avoids my Boston Celtics and instead faces your New York Knicks.
I'm going to go with the Sixers.
Ooh.
And here's why. Joel Embiid is healthy. He's the best player on the floor. They don't have anyone that can really match up with him individually.
Bam Adebayo, you don't think Bam can match?
I love Bam.
Like, but everyone in the league.
But look, let's face it. Joel Embiid is too big, too strong, too talented just for about every matchup in this league.
Yeah, but if we had to make a list of, if I said to you, you've got to find someone to guard Joel Embiid one-on-one, how high would Bam be up on that list? Who would even be above him on that list?
No. Bam would definitely be in my top 5 or 6 centers to guard him. But also, you know, again, the Miami Heat, their team, you know, look, Eric Spoelstra, who I have a tremendous amount of respect, and our listeners, and you know this all too well, just how much I talk about the Miami Heat and the amount of respect that I have for them. I just think being at home, the urgency that Philadelphia is going to play with to win this first game so that they can buy Joel, you know, a day or two, you know, extra rest.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm banking on. Would it surprise me if Miami beats them? Absolutely not, because Miami, they don't beat themselves. They're going to be highly prepared. They just don't look, and even though I know they're going to be ready for the playoffs, they just don't look quite the same as they normally do going into playoffs. And I mean the Miami Heat. They're not just
what's the difference that you're missing?
Yeah, I don't know if they're missing guys like, you know, Max Strus and Gabe Vincent, who were so big for them last year during their run. You know, Tyler Hero's been out a lot this year. He's just coming back. I really like the addition of Terry Rozier when they went and got him, but he's really struggled up until really the last couple of weeks and starting to play better right now. Jimmy has not looked as sharp this year, even heading into the playoffs. You know, last year heading into the playoffs, he was really starting to put some more consistent games together and looking like that playoff Jimmy. So we'll see. I'm just, you know, I'm going with the team that has the momentum. You meant they're 6-0 since Embiid has been back. They've won 8 straight, and they're at home. So that's why I'm going to stick with my pick and pick Philadelphia in that one.
I do hear it, because the Heat lost their first playing game last year as well against the Hawks in a game which many people expected them to win. I also feel like the Heat got through the first round as the 8 seed last year. They kind of almost love being the villain. Not saying that they'd lose this game on purpose, but they wouldn't be as desperate to win this. As you rightly pointed out, the Sixers would rather not risk Embiid maybe even getting injured in another playing game, give him some more time to rest before the playoffs. But having said that, with Eric Spoelstra, you never know what he's got up his sleeve to try and neutralize Joel Embiid.
Yeah, no, look, the Sixers are going to definitely have to go beat that team, because like I told you before, the Heat do not beat themselves. And in terms of preparation, Eric Spoelstra is as good as a coach that we have in the NBA today.
Okay, well, over in the West, the 7-8 play-in is the number 7 seeded New Orleans Pelicans, who are going to face the number 8 seeded Lakers, who are led by LeBron James, who once said that the NBA play-in, whoever invented the idea, should be fired, and then went on to feature in the NBA play-in every year since it was conceived. We've got a live caller on line one. Just bear with me right here, Scott.
Okay.
BJ, you're live on the air. You're live on the air with me and Scott. You're on speakerphone. Talk to us. Cool, reconnecting.
Guy.
He's on a plane right now, so that's probably why I cut out. But anyway, the Pelicans and the Lakers. Scott, what are we thinking?
This one's a little easier for me. I'm going to Los Angeles Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the Lakers have owned this Pelicans team. They showed that today. They're going in, you know, the Pelicans were playing for the 6th seed today at home. Lakers led them by 30 points for much of the game. As long as Anthony Davis is healthy, let me put that, because I know he left at the end of this game with some sort of strained back. But as long as he's healthy enough to play, we saw it early in the year when they played the in-season tournament, and they dominated the Pelicans in that venue. I don't know the season series, but I'd like to think that
the Lakers won 3-1.
3-1, exactly. Okay, I knew I figured they had won more than they lost against them. And again, LeBron, AD, they understand the importance. Let's just play one game to get in the playoffs. They don't want to be fooling around with having to play a second game. I think they understand how to beat this team. They're more poised. They're more experienced. And I think the Pelicans are going to be playing a little bit tight now, because, look, they had the playoffs in their hands a couple weeks ago. Then they lost 5 or 6 games at home.
Bear in mind, though, Brandon Ingram has been out and he returned today for this game, and it might take a couple games for him to gel. And
there's no question. Sometimes, you know, even though he's, you know, your second best player coming back, sometimes that can upset how your offense flows and how the minutes are doled out, and it takes a little while for everybody to adjust, not just him. So, again, I like the Lakers winning this game, and I would call that an upset if the Pelicans do, in fact, win that play-in game, even though they're the home team.
Well, the prize for winning the first play-in game means that you get to go in as the number 7 seed and face the number 2 seed, in which case it would be the Denver Nuggets. And if you're the Lakers, you would love to match up with all 7 other teams in the West aside from the Denver Nuggets. Would that factor into things? Because we saw a lot of teams today. I'm looking at you, Cleveland Cavaliers, with an absolutely disgraceful performance, trying to avoid winning, to avoid being the number 2 seed, to avoid the Heat or the Sixers. So this is my question to you. Do you think there may be a little bit of that? If the Pelicans get out to a lead early on, do you think the Lakers might take their foot off the gas and have an eye on qualifying as number 8 instead?
I'd like to think not, Mo. I mean,
I'd like to be seven foot and a billionaire, but here we are.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I you know, because here again, you're taking for granted. Let's say we play that out, what you're saying. Okay, we want to avoid the Denver Nuggets. And I've gone on record saying that the Lakers would want to see anybody in the Western Conference not name the Denver Nuggets. I get that. I understand that. But when you got a chance that's right in front of you to get in the playoffs in this one game, to me, you got to take it, because anything can happen in that second game, and then you not even make the playoffs at all. So
you say that anything can happen in the second game, yes. But against the Nuggets have won 8 straight games against the Lakers. If you combine
what I'm saying, anything can happen. If the Lakers were to say, let's take the foot off the gas.
Oh, no. But what I'm saying,
to be the 7th seed, and then, okay, let's go ahead and try to win a home game to get in and be the 8th seed. What I'm saying, anything could happen in that other play-in game where you lose that game.
But I'm saying the reverse, right? I'm saying if you go through as the 7th seed, you will lose to the Denver Nuggets.
Okay.
Okay, I'm doing a Charles Barkley guarantee that you're going to lose to the Nuggets in the first round. The Nuggets have won all 4 games, and they swept them out of the playoffs last year. And they've won their last 4 regular season matchups. I don't see a way in which over 7 games, Nikola Jokic loses that series against the Lakers. Now, losing that first playing game is a lot riskier because, like you said, anything could happen, especially you're going to more than likely be taking on Stephen Curry. However, if you do win that second playing game, you're then going up against an extremely inexperienced, very young OKC Thunder side in the first round. And then in the second round, you're going up against the LA Clippers, and who knows how healthy they'll be by the time the second round of the playoff rolls around, or the Dallas Mavericks, where although their defense has improved, when it's LeBron James in the playoffs, I don't think I can see anyone on the Dallas Mavericks slowing him down. Mm-hmm. And then you avoid meeting Denver until the conference finals. Do you see where I'm coming from with this?
Oh, no, you make a compelling case. There's no question you make a compelling case. And I don't disagree with what you're saying with the matchups. I don't disagree with it at all. But I'm going to take the other side of this argument for 1 second. And I'm going to be LeBron James for a minute, who has been to 10 NBA finals. He's the all-time leading scorer. He's in the argument daily for the GOAT of all time in the sport. What better way to cement that argument than to go take on the Denver Nuggets, who you haven't beaten 8 straight time in 8 games? You're 0-8, the last 8, and then you go ahead and you upset them in the first round.
The documentary would be crazy.
How about that? Yeah, how would that put some icing on the cake that he has so artfully made for himself.
That would be crazy. And Denver haven't looked too great in their last few games either. That's a little bit worrying considering they're 6-4 over their last, you know, their last 10 games. But that's great. You know, if it's a movie script that we're writing, that would be fantastic. Exactly. But it's the real world. Nikola Jokic exists.
Exactly.
Like, it's like you watch the Lakers and the Nuggets. The Lakers play great defense for 23.9 seconds. And with 0.1 second on the shot clock, Jokic just heaves it from halfway line and it goes in. And that's how it's been going. But like, okay, cool. Let's say the Lakers do go through as the seventh seed. And that would leave the Pelicans taking on the winner of Kings Warriors. And you're pretty confident that it's going to be the Warriors. Do you see the Warriors as the 10th seed going on the road twice? So going to Sacramento and then going to New Orleans to take on the Pelicans and qualify as the 8th seed?
I do.
Even with their lack of size compared to a giant.
Even with their lack of size. And I think they recently beat, the last time that they played, they lost to the Pelicans.
No, the Pelicans won their last two matchups.
The Pelicans did. Oh, they did win the last two matches.
The Warriors last beat them on October 30th, and I believe that was the October 30th.
Okay, I'm mistaken. However, in a pressure-packed game like that, where to me, I mean, there'll be a lot of pressure on the Warriors to make it into the playoffs, and you know, and for guys like Draymond and Klay and Steph not, you know, want to have their run end in a play-in game. But there's going to be a lot of pressure on the home team. And just watching the Pelicans, to me, they have not handled tough pressure situations very well. So in a one-game knockout, I'm going to go with the championship pedigree and experience, and I'm going to pick the Golden State Warriors to win if both those teams match up.
I see what you're saying. Now, last season, a big story in the playoffs was Dylan Brooks saying, "I poke bears," when he was going at LeBron James. Mm-hmm. If I'm the Sacramento Kings, or if I'm the Pelicans in the second game, or the Lakers in the second game, and I was on the roster, okay? Mm-hmm. My sole purpose, whenever I'm there, would be to rile up Draymond Green and get him ejected and suspended. I'm with all the smoke. That's what I would be doing. And we know his history with Sabonis in Sacramento. And we know his temperament. And we've seen numerous flashes of it over just the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. So there's no guarantee that he's even there for the second playing game. Or how long will he be on the court for the first playing game? Let me ask you this. Let me phrase that a little bit better. Would that factor into you as in the front office or as part of a coaching staff to instruct your players to go out there and get under a skin? Because I remember watching the Nuggets versus Lakers in the conference finals in the bubble. And I don't know whether Dwight took it upon himself or if he was under instruction to get under Jokic's skin as much as he possibly could. If you remember, Dwight was like, he would go over to the Nuggets timeout during timeouts. He'd go over to their huddle and try and listen in. And he was constantly trying to get under Jokic's skin. Do you think that there will be any gamesmanship from the Kings or whichever team faces the Warriors to try and provoke Draymond into a reaction?
Great question, Mo. I haven't given that a ton of thought. What I would say, and it would probably come more from the coaching staff than versus the front office or the players themselves as they talk about preparing to beat this team. And whoever's matched up with Draymond, and I'm assuming that would be, in the Kings' case, Domantas Sabonis, you're going to look at, okay, what can I do to win this matchup with Draymond tonight? And
It might even be Keegan Murray, because now they're playing Trace Jackson Davis at the center.
Yeah, right. But I'm just saying, but you know, you're going to start with the matchup, and then you look at what backups.
Yeah, I don't think that they can put Jackson Davis on Murray, though. They would have to put him on Sabonis, because he's not going to chase Murray around screens and get out to Murray's three-point shooting.
Agreed. But I think that they have to. Because you've played against this guy so many times, what gets under his skin a little bit.
And the Kings have Harrison Barnes, former teammate of Draymond Green.
There's no question about it. Now, the thing you can't do is let that become such a distraction to you of trying to figure that out that you don't play the game the way you normally play the game.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? And the Kings as a unit is not they're not an overly physical team, an overly aggressive team. You know, they're more finesse and skill.
Speed.
So I don't, and speed, yeah. And so I don't know if they have the makeup as a team, because it's not only the guy whose matchup it is, but you're going to need backup from the rest of your teammates when you start poking bears like that. So I don't know if the Kings are the best team to necessarily pull that off. I think the best way to frustrate Draymond really is just to go at him on the defensive end. You know, that he's known as a great defender, but he's slowing down just a touch. I would be going at him at that end. And then offensively, I would be trying to make him more of a scorer.
We saw him rattle off 5 threes the other night against the Lakers.
Yeah, okay. And okay, I can live with that. I'd rather him make 5 threes than Steph make 8.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or Klay make 8, you know. So
yeah.
Let me limit those guys to 2 or 3, and then make Draymond have to make 5 or 6. So that's what I would be doing if I was Sacramento.
I would be, if I was the Kings, I'd be waiting outside the visitors' locker room before the game for him to arrive. I'll start trash talking him there and then.
Mm-hmm.
Then I in the warm ups, I wouldn't even warm up. I'll just be going over to the Warriors side. Man, listen, I will take the fine and the suspension.
See, Mo, we'd have to put you on one of our old Detroit Piston teams.
Hell yeah.
An old bad boy team. Because that see, now you're talking like those guys used to talk and for games. So
that was my golden era of the NBA. Yeah, but
exactly.
Let's talk about the East. Who do you expect to take the 8th seed in the East? So if you think the 76ers are going to go 7th, do you think the Heat will win that second playing game? Or do you think the Bulls or the Hawks could beat the Miami Heat?
No, I do think the Heat would be in. I think that 7-8, the 7-8 teams in the East will both eventually make it.
Mm-hmm.
And both be in the playoffs and be a tough out for whoever they play.
Absolutely. I mean, then you get into the playoff matchups, which look, if things go to how we've recorded, if they go according to how we predicted in this episode, you'd have a Celtics Heat first round. You'd have a Knicks Sixers first round. You'd have a Bucks Pacers first round. And remember the bad blood between them, you know, when they had the game ball issue when Giannis was trying to take the game ball home and not let the Pacers have it. Mm-hmm. And the Cavs and the Magic, I think that'd be a fun series. And over in the West, you would have the Thunder versus the Warriors, the Nuggets versus the Lakers, Timberwolves and Suns. And things got a little chippy there today between Ant-Man and Bradley Beal for a little bit. And then the series I'm most excited for is the Clippers and the Mavericks, which we've been talking about for weeks now. Yeah, but before we go, I wanted to get your opinion on something that happened earlier this week. And it was Drew Holiday receiving a contract extension from the Boston Celtics, because the Celtics famously gave Jaylen Brown that Supermax contract at the start of this season. They extended Kristaps Porzingis. They're going to need to give Jason Tatum a Supermax. They're going to need to give Derek White a new contract. And Al Horford's going to need some amount of money if he decides to not retire. How does this fit into the future plans of the Celtics? Because looking at everything they've achieved in a regular season, so the Boston Celtics had 64 wins, right? That is the NBA's best record. And they won the Eastern Conference by 14 games. That is the largest conference win, like the biggest difference between the 1 seed and 2 seed since 1976, which obviously isn't a testament to how great the Celtics are. It's more how kind of bad the Eastern Conference is. However, when we look at this, they had the 5th best scoring margin in NBA history. They had the 3rd best scoring margin at home in NBA history. They had the best offense in NBA history with 1.22 points per possession. They had the 2nd most threes in NBA history. They've had 37 home wins, which is the 3rd most in Celtics history. Obviously, one of the best franchises ever, but the most in the NBA in the last 8 years. They won or tied the season series with 28 of the 29 teams, the only team that beat them in a season series was the Denver Nuggets, which will be interesting if there is a finals matchup there. They had the NBA's best home record, fewest road losses, best record in back-to-backs. They clinched the playoffs 17 days before any other team. They clinched the NBA's best record before 12 teams even clinched a playoff spot. Their longest losing streak this season has only been 2 games. They've never lost more than 2 games in a row. And the list goes on and on and on for how great they were. Having said all of that, if they don't win a championship, all of those stats go out the window, put them in a bin. They mean absolutely nothing. And now from the financial side, with all this money they're spending, how long is the window they have with this group of players to keep them together to win a championship?
Well, obviously in their mind, they think it's the next 3 or 4 years that they've signed Jrue Holiday to this contract. You know, when you watch your team play throughout an entire regular season, you start to formulate thoughts, ideas of just about how good you are, what you may be lacking. Are you championship caliber or not? They obviously believe that this team is championship caliber. To your point, they still have to prove it by going ahead and winning the championship, not just making it to the finals, but actually getting across the finish line and winning it. With that set being said, I believe that, again, from the Celtics standpoint, and the front office is looking at this, for some reason, even if they don't win it this year, that they could still bring the core of this group back, maybe make an additional tweak here or there. And again, this group is still going to be good enough to be challenging for an NBA title over the next 3 or 4 seasons. And that's what you want. And look, Jrue Holiday is a true professional. He's a two-way guard. It's hard finding these two-way players now that are excellent defensively, but very capable offensively. He's a high character guy. And so, it makes sense. And worst case scenario, if things don't work out, he's the type of player that's going to have value around the league. Guy won a championship in Milwaukee. He was good in New Orleans when he played there.
All-star in Philly.
All-star in Philly. So you get the type of contract, and I know he's getting a little older now. He's north of 30, but he's a guy that has high value around the league and obviously high internal value in Boston. And I think it was a wise move on their part. And it kind of settles things down for all the players on the team. Everybody can look around and know, okay, they believe in us. So now we just got to go out and do it.
Well, you mentioned his age. When he's 37, he'll be earning $37 million from the Boston Celtics. But here's the thing that I find interesting with the contract. It was on the books next season. If he accepted his player option, that would have been a $39 million cap hit. However, the way his new contract is structured, it's only $30 million. I say only $30 million. It's $30 million next season, then $32, then $35, and then $37. So it's progressively increasing as it goes along, which gives the team more flexibility next season than they would have had he accepted his player option or if he wanted a straight-up deal. But does it concern you that he said that he would retire after this season originally? And, he said he wanted to retire in Milwaukee. He said he wanted to retire after this season. It would be his last season playing. Does that concern you at all?
Again, when I'm not with that player, it's hard for me to express concern one way or the other. If he had said that directly to me, then to me, that's where your body language comes in. If a guy is just kind of talking.
I have to listen to what people say. For example, our friend Monty Williams said he didn't want to coach the Pistons. He wanted to take a break from coaching. And then they put a $70 million check in front of him. And all of a sudden he wants to stay coaching. Jrue Holiday wanted to retire. I don't know anyone in the world who wants to retire, but wouldn't say I'll give it 4 more years for $135 million. So,
very good point, but I've got to give that front office at Boston enough credit. I mean, just last week we said Brad Stevens was the executive of the year.
That's right.
I would like to think that Brad Stevens has a good feeling about Jrue Holiday, and that Jrue Holiday plans to play much further than this season, this year, that at least he's going to get a few years out of him. Now, well, maybe that last year, who knows?
Yeah, well, next year will be the final year of Al Horford's contract, and he will be turning, what, 39, 40 years old? I don't know if he'll continue playing after that. This season, they do have to pay Xavier Tillman, who comes off the books this offseason. But what's interesting, next year is also Derek White's final season as a $90 million guy currently. The Celtics can extend him, but I'm thinking that he would get a lot more money if he hit free agency. So does that worry you, the potential of losing Derek White now that you've given Jrue Holiday this huge extension?
Look, it's hard to keep your team totally intact when you start paying everybody in your starting five is going to be north of $20 million. And in this case, you know, you got a
north of 30 million.
Gonna be in the 50s. Yeah,
yeah. yeah. Jalen's in the 50s. Tatum's going to be in the 50s.
And Tatum's going to be in the 50s. So you got to know that you probably going to lose one or two of those guys. And look, I like Derek White a lot. I think he's an excellent player. He's very important to that team. But here's what happens most, and this is my perspective as a front office. As I watch their team, I still don't see a player that, okay, he's at $19 million, that I'm going to go out and pay a max contract because he's played so well in Boston. He's in his right role in Boston. Mm-hmm. And you have to be careful that you don't set out to start overpaying guys like that. And again, there's no disrespect to him. I think he's a great player, and he's the type of player that I would like on my team. But then there's the business side to it. You still have to put the proper valuation on talent. And so if you're Boston, they'll look at it and say, okay, there's a price to what they will keep him at, you know, because they can retain him. They'll have his bird rights. And if someone wants to pay him an exorbitant amount of money to pull him away from the Celtics, then you'll be prepared to that. Be prepared for that. And either you trade him away to try to get something in return, or you just lose him outright.
And I think the way the Celtics are set up, right, they're set up for this year and next year. And this concern about Derek White coincides with when the new TV deal for the NBA is expected to kick in. Now, I don't know what the cap figures will be after that new TV deal kicks in, but if it's anything like the last time, which essentially created basically an extra max contract space for the Golden State Warriors to get Kevin Durant, if that deal increases the salary cap by what it's expected to, they'll be able to pay Derek White as well and have no problems. And in a lot of these contracts, like you've got Kristaps Porzingis on $30 million, that would feel more like 20 rather than 30 because of the new additional space that's been created. But of course, whenever there's a contract, we have to get the expert opinions of 23-year NBA executive, Mr. Scott Perry. That's been another episode of the show. Thank you, Scott, for joining us as always. And congratulations on your first regular season with the Hoop Genius podcast. The question is, are you ready for your first playoffs with the Hoop Genius podcast?
Now, I'm really looking forward to that mode of playoffs because I can already tell, and this is the evaluator in me, that it's going to be a lot of spicy conversation and debate come playoff time on the Hoop Genius.
This is what we do. But it does get a little bit more technical as well, because usually when you come on, we go through our top five list, we go through teams to watch, but we go a little bit more technical when the playoffs come around with what's happening on the court as well. So
Look forward to that, because now you bring back the old coach in me. Remember, I coached 13 years, Mo, before I came into the NBA.
Coach Perry in the place.
Exactly.
I'm looking forward to it, man. Well, we've got 1 week left until they begin, and in the meantime, we've got the NBA play-in tournament, but stay with us. We've got a lot coming for you guys this week. Make sure you subscribe across YouTube, Spotify, and Apple, wherever you get your podcasts from. And most importantly, you know the vibes. Until next time, get buckets.